Welcome, everybody, to Redacted on this Monday. I'm Clayton Morris.
I'm Natalie Morris.
So glad to have you here. Let us know where you're joining us from. We are live at 4 p.m. Eastern time, Monday through Thursday. So glad to see all of you around the world. Let us know. We're streaming live on Rumble and on YouTube and on X simultaneously. We've got a busy show for you on this Monday. We're going to be looking at Egypt right next to the Rafah border crossing, and what is about to unfold in Gaza could be devastating. We just heard from Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu over the weekend, and additional attacks unfolding this afternoon. What is the world going to do about this? The eyes of the world right now are on what happens in Rafah. So we'll talk about that.
Plus, we're going to talk about the State Department and their new campaign against misinformation and disinformation. These are the same jokers who propagated misinformation. We saw this during the Twitter files. We're going to go over everything we know that they were up to. And guess what? Canada and the UK are going to let them lead their misinformation campaigns. Like, yeah, you did all this stuff. You censored your own citizens. You made up a bunch of crappy stuff.
Yeah.
We'll do that too. So way to go, Canada and the UK, trusting us with the football.
Oh, Canada. Also, we're going to look at NATO green lighting attacks inside of Russia. Yeah, Jens Stoltenberg, the head of NATO, said to Ukraine, hey, we're long range weapons ready, attack inside of Russia. How do you think Vladimir Putin's going to respond to that? We're going to get an update on the war front in Ukraine, all of that and more as Redacted starts right now. Love our headlines. If you look at our show rundown, it says sex is real. Sex is real.
You're not supposed to say that in the year 2024, but
biological
guess what?
Sex.
We're saying that.
Biological sex.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, what? I'm not going to pick that one up.
Yeah, don't touch that.
Okay.
But yeah, biological sex is real. I know we're not allowed to really talk about that in 2024, but we will. We will talk about that. Great to see all of you guys. Jenny Lynn is here. Good to see you. Malania is here. Again, let us know where you're joining us from around the world. Ontario, Canada in the house. Good to see everyone here. So we've got, we got a daily newsletter we should tell everyone about because we haven't talked about this in a while. Like what?
Okay,
I'm still in my weekend brain.
Okay.
So sorry.
We're doing a show right now. We have a lot of stuff to talk about today, and we talk about those things in our daily newsletter. You should subscribe. It's super fun. You can find it at redacted.inc. It's a free newsletter. We publish it every day that this show comes out, every Monday through Thursday. And it has a lot of the stories that we're going to talk about in the show later on that day. But it also has other fun tidbits as well. So if you head on over to redacted.inc, you'll find the sign up link. You put in your email address and then we'll send it to you. We really appreciate your interaction with the newsletter. And yeah, the newsletter's free. It's great. Sign up, redacted.inc.
Yeah. So yes, please sign up. All right. Dallas, Texas in the house. David, Philip, everything good on your side? Is everything good to go on your side?
Yep. Everything's running smooth.
Okay, good.
If you give me you might need to give me just a minute because I'm having issues.
Okay. See, that's why
I asked. Fixed, but it'll just, yeah, I know, because I couldn't run the B-roll.
Yeah.
It's easily fixed. I just need to...
All right. You do that. You work on that.
And
I will say hello to everyone in our chat room. And if I can, my text is like so small today. You do what you need to do with the mouse there. Go Redacted. We need more truth, says Hebred. Nice to see you. Slovakia says hello.
Holland, Chicago, Houston, Croatia, Greece. Thank you so much.
Egypt.
For joining us.
Russia. Croatia, yeah, Holland, Chicago, Tucson, Arizona. Nice to see you. Rella Hagley is here in Alaska. Nice to see you. Anchorage, Alaska. There's a couple of people from Alaska. You guys should get together. We should be a Redacted meetup in Alaska, in Anchorage, Alaska.
You want to do that?
Yeah, if you guys each had Redacted shirts and you were out like at the Redacted, you know, you went to the store.
Right.
You know, have the
same. I've only done a meetup once when I first had a show on CNET and... That was something. That was, you know, I'm always nervous to do those kind of things with Redacted or something like that.
Do you remember?
Because we're so spread out and I get nervous no one would show up.
I went to that meetup with you, and I'll never forget. There was a funny story. Can we just give a little funny story before we start the news? There were a couple of members of the NYPD who were there, and mm-hmm. they were fans of your work, and they were in their cyber crimes division.
Yes.
And we got to talking with them, very fascinating about the New York Times, or the NYPD and their cyber crimes division. And they said, I asked them, is there like a profile? Like a typical profile of a pedophile that you guys are, they track these people down online in the New York area. Is there a typical profile? And the NYPD guy told me, he says, yes, they're usually Mets fans. And I just remember laughing my ass off because as a Phillies fan, I thought that was the funniest thing in the world.
I think we've been together too long because it was me that asked that question.
Oh, okay.
So now you're telling stories as if we cannot separate each other.
Well, we were in a conversation.
Where do I start and anyway, where do you end?
But I just love that as a Phillies fan. I thought it was great that the NYPD thinks that that's a similar profile for pedophiles was Mets fans.
Yeah.
No, I'm not saying all Mets fans, but just the ones that the cyber crimes division had
right,
to deal with.
Right. So not all Mets fans are pedophiles, but all pedophiles are Mets fans.
I guess that's the common thread.
In the New York tri-state area.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, that's what they told me. Don't shoot the messenger here. Okay, let's get into it. We've got a lot of news to get to. All right. Well, here's a question for you. Why did Egyptian contractors sign a contract to rebuild Gaza back in 2021? Why did Egypt start building a massive open-air prison on their land back in 2014, right next to the border crossing with Israel? It's almost as if someone knew exactly what was about to happen to Gaza years before it actually happened. How could they make money off of this, right? Just like Ukraine, of course. On this show, we don't believe in coincidences. We'll get to this piece of the story here in a second. But first, is southern Gaza about to be turned into a massive graveyard? It sure seems that way. Right now, the world is watching the small city of Rafah at this hour, which at least I'm watching it. I hope the rest of the world is paying attention to what's about to happen here. Here you go on the map. It's bisected by the border, of course, between Gaza and Egypt, right down the middle, just like Bluefield, West Virginia, and Bluefield, Virginia, right through the state lines. It is a border town in Gaza, leads into Egypt. This is an area, you'll recall, that Israel asked all Palestinians to evacuate to. Remember this? Just a few short months ago, Israel tells Gazans to move south or risk being seen as a terrorist partner. Go south, they said. You'll be safe in the south. We will root out Hamas in the tunnels in the north. So go south. Watch.
Leaflets rained down on northern Gaza Friday, Israel telling Palestinians to move south, a sign that a ground invasion is likely coming soon. Residents packed into vehicles. More than 1 million people live in and around Gaza City. And even if people move south, there's no way out of Gaza. The border to Egypt is blocked.
So you go south, you'll be safe. Hundreds of thousands, of course, made that pilgrimage south towards Rafah while the rest of Gaza was leveled. Now all these people are bunched up into a choke point next to Egypt like sitting ducks. Unintentional, of course, I'm sure. Bring everyone into like a funnel, unintentionally, they're all in this one place. Sure. Fool me once, right? They've set up tents now to live in. There's very little food available. New video this weekend, of course, shows children begging for food through the border fence, asking Egyptian soldiers for food. Watch this heartbreaking video. According to journalist Vanessa Beely, who put a lot of these pieces together, in order to cross the border into Egypt, you'll need to pay the corrupt Egyptian Sinai warlord $5,000 and $2,500 per child just to cross the border. And as you can imagine, these people have tons of extra cash laying around. So it's very easy then for them to just pull $5,000 out of their shirt pocket and pay off a corrupt Egyptian warlord in order to cross the border to get into Egypt. Why don't they just jump the fence like they do in the United States, where instead of paying to get in, we pay you. The United States will pay you $10,000 and give you a debit card and an Obama cell phone and three meals a day. Well, you can't really do that because here they have a border fence. Here is the border fence between Israel, Gaza, and Egypt. Look at this massive border fence covered in razor wire, ringed with barbed wire. There's no way to get in, of course, and if you somehow manage to climb up there and be sliced open, you'll be shot. So you will not be entering. And you'll be shot on sight. This morning, Israeli forces opened fire on people gathering to try to get food aid. Watch this. Want some food? No food for you. This weekend, we got our clearest sign yet that Israel plans to destroy the city of Rafah, along with anything that moves. The goal is to ethnically cleanse all Palestinians from this area. You can use the term genocide if you like, but ethnically cleansing or ethnic cleansing is probably more appropriate, more accurate as to what's happening here. Actively removing an entire population of people from a region, come hell or high water, however you're going to remove them. All of Gaza will be under Israeli control if Benjamin Netanyahu gets his way. He told CBS this weekend that Israel will, quote, maintain its operational freedom of action in the entire Gaza Strip, he said, without a time limit. And, quote, the security perimeter being created in the Gaza Strip on the border with Israel will remain as long as there is a security need for it, end quote. Like an open-ended war, right? An open-ended war on terror?
No, I'm sure they'll end the security and, you know, end their extensive powers there, right?
Oh, I'm sure.
All governments do that. Once the security ends and the emergency ends.
Right.
Yeah, they'll give back that power.
They always
land, I'm sure.
Exactly.
What's that?
I've got some bad news for you, Natalie.
Oh,
I don't think that's ever happened. Yeah, any government ever has ended anything. No.
Okay. No. All right.
Sorry.
Ceding power back, executives ceding power back, like that, not going to happen.
No.
Even with tens of thousands of people protesting Benjamin Netanyahu in Israel, and those have gotten louder and larger, and of course the mainstream media is totally ignoring that story, by the way. Why? Why are they ignoring that story? It's kind of interesting. We're just asking the question, why are they ignoring it? It's not on your nightly news, though.
Well, even with the talks of a ceasefire now, Netanyahu is saying we can't actually talk about a ceasefire because it will delay the ground invasion in Rafah, as if that was always the plan. And so those of us who can remember a few weeks back remember that they were told to go there and that they would be safe there. So when did we all decide that a ground invasion in Rafah was a great idea? I don't remember that. It just came out of nowhere. Like, well, you know that was always the plan, right?
Right. And so basically, in other words, in perpetuity is what this will be. The security, the relinquishing of security, it's not going to happen. It's going to remain in perpetuity and taking over this entire area. Yesterday, kids were flying kites near the border with Rafah.
Well, he literally said over the weekend that total victory in the territory will come within weeks once the offensive begins. This is not even it. As horrible as it feels right now in the images that we see, it would seem they're still squatting low to jump high.
Right. I like that, squat low to jump high. We're going to hear from Netanyahu in a second here, but this is what happened yesterday. Take a look at your images here. Kids are out flying kites. This is right there is the border wall. You can see in Rafah. So kids were out flying kites because what else are they going to do? And Israeli Defense Forces decided to launch white phosphorus attacks on the people gathered there. And of course, burning many tents to the ground. White phosphorus, of course, is internationally banned. We're not allowed to use a white phosphorus. It's illegal. But come on, what does the rule of law mean in 2024? Not much. White phosphorus is a chemical compound that is self-igniting. So when it contacts air or oxygen, it's hot enough to burn anything it touches, which becomes fuel for the fire, like human skin. Clothing, tents.
Well, what do you think this phrase means, that we will maintain operational freedom? It means you will not be telling us what to do, period. We don't care who says boo, how powerful they are. We don't give an F. We're going to do what we want. Operational freedom.
So before this interview, and you can watch it in Netanyahu's face, like he's like, I run the United States. He's like, I tell U.S. Congress what to do. Joe Biden is a meat puppet. I control the show. I'm Benjamin Netanyahu. I do everything. He's in total control. And watch him in this interview. He's basically telling We're not going to be told what to do by anybody. This is what we're going to do. Listen to his response about how long this will take and what's about to happen in Rafah to these people.
But understand that unless we have total victory, we can't have peace. We can't leave Hamas in place. We can't leave a quarter of Hamas battalions in Rafah and say, well, that's fine.
On the issue of the hostages, as you know, time is of the essence here. So if this deal happens and there are 6 weeks of calm that go with it, does that provide an opening to end this war, or will you still go into southern Gaza, into Rafah, regardless?
Yeah, well, victory is within reach, and you can't have victory until you eliminate Hamas. Hamas
How
is a terrorist organization
reach?
That... once we begin the Rafah operation, the intense phase of the fighting is weeks away from completion. Not months, weeks away from completion. And that is, we've already destroyed 18 out of the 24 Hamas terrorist battalions. So we have a few, and four of them are concentrated in Rafah. We can't leave the last Hamas stronghold without taking care of it. Obviously, we have to do it. But understand, too, that I've asked the army to submit to me a double plan. First, to evacuate, to enable the evacuation of the Palestinian civilians in Gaza, and obviously, second, to destroy the remaining Hamas battalions. That gets us a real, real distance towards the completion of our victory. And that, we're not going to give it up.
We're not going to give it up.
Once we get started, he says, once the intense part hasn't started.
Yeah, well, my point is, the intense part hasn't started. Like, we haven't even seen the intense part yet. That's why I'm saying all the world right now is paying attention to this. Ireland paying attention to this. Countries across Europe are paying attention to this and saying, enough is enough here. This is going to be an absolute bloodbath. Go ahead, Philip.
I want to know which one of the military generals on that double plan put using white phosphorus on civilians as part of the relocation portion of that double plan they have to evacuate the refugees.
Where was that written down?
Right. And also, this is, I mean, absolute journalistic, what's the word I'm looking for here?
Faff.
Garbage. I mean, I don't know what the phrase I'm looking for. You don't ask that question of him? Like, why are they using white phosphorus? We have the video of it. How is that? It's illegal. How are you using this on the people in Rafah right now? Where you, by the way, you told them to go there. They have nowhere else to go. Mm-hmm. And they're not getting food and water. You sent them there. You dropped leaflets, told them to go there. And now you're also shooting them. How does this work? And they can't get through a wall because you have corrupt Egyptian warlords who won't let you through unless you pay $5,000. You see how this is working?
Also, what about those hostages that you have, sir, and have had for years and years? You know, the Israeli hostages are not the only hostages that the world should care about. So what about them?
So the timing of all this is very fishy. And as I mentioned earlier, in the year 2014, 10 years ago, Egypt started kicking people out of their homes in Rafah. Let me repeat that. In 2014, 10 years ago, Egypt started kicking people out of their homes in Rafah on the Egyptian side, tearing them down. It's odd, right? Why? Why would that happen? Residents were outraged at the time, demanded the government compensate them for their seized homes. Then in the year 2021, Ibrahim al-Arjani, who is very close to the son of Egypt's president al-Sisi, was awarded the rebuilding contract for Gaza. Interesting. As Haaretz reports, Egypt's monopoly on rebuilding Gaza. So Egypt has a monopoly on rebuilding Gaza? We know this thanks to Israeli news agency Haaretz, which exposed this monopoly that Egypt has over Gaza reconstruction. Again, reconstruction. It's almost as if they knew it was going to happen, right? It's crazy. So Egypt seems very keen on making a lot of money off of this war. Then a few months ago, something even fishier happened. Construction started on a massive walled open-air prison on the Egyptian side of the border fence, being built by the same guys that are about to profit handsomely off of Gaza reconstruction. Now, here you can see cranes, wall construction beginning. This video has been shared by multiple news outlets. Now, we haven't independently confirmed it, to be clear, but these are being shared by other news outlets to say this is construction on this section right here next to the border wall.
And to be fair, there is a lot of construction in the Sinai region. A lot of tourists, a lot of...
Yeah, but this is literally next to the wall. This is adjacent to the wall and for a sole purpose. Forget all the Saudi money and everything else that's poured into other parts of the Sinai. This is specifically construction benefiting this individual that we've been talking about, Al-Arjani, but also right in a partnership with Israel. And this is on the Egyptian side of the border fence at Rafah, as you can see here in white. Take a look at this satellite imagery here. So that white, keep this up on the screen for a little bit, if you would, Philip, here. See the red line there. What's amazing about this is that after the 2005 Philadelphia Accord, Israel was given control over this area. Egypt gave control of its own land over to Israel. So who or what do you think will be soon living in this giant rectangle? Guys, what do you guys think? This giant wall, open-air prison. Who's going to be living in this giant, giant rectangle, or I guess you would call that a trapezoid?
It's a trapezoid. Yeah.
Trapezoid. So this is the giant open-air prison that's being built right now by Egypt on the border. Who do you think is going to be living in this walled city here? Who? Oh, you guys can't guess. It's going to be the Palestinians, right? Who else is going to be living in this plush surroundings, surrounded by Israeli guards, right?
Who's the surviving Palestinians?
Right. Who's left over, who will not be killed, will wind up in this trapezoid here. The giant walled open-air prison. So even CNN had the balls to expose this corruption. I meant construction. Egypt is building a new walled buffer zone more than 2 miles wide on Gaza border, satellite images show. And they took it a step further, did CNN. You can't believe this. Who is the main builder who is benefiting from building this prison and the so-called buffer zone? Yes, according to CNN, it's the same Ibrahim El-Arjani who owns some of the largest construction companies in Egypt. Now, according to the news reports, he has very close ties to the Egyptian Intel Agency, and he receives his marching orders from them, according to these reports. According to Vanessa Bealey, he is the man controlling this border crossing, charging $5,000 per person to cross. And according to the Sinai Foundation, they describe this massive open-air prison this way. The Sinai Foundation obtained information through a relevant source that indicates the construction work currently taking place in eastern Sinai is intended to create a high-security, gated, and isolated area near the borders with Gaza Strip, in preparation for the reception of Palestinian refugees in the case of the mass exodus of the citizens of Gaza Strip.
Just in case.
So these people will be forced out of Gaza, across the border crossing, into this new open-air prison built by Egypt and controlled by the Israeli Defense Forces. So even if they make it to Egypt, they'll still be guarded by Israel. Does anyone else find this incredibly fascinating that after the Philadelphia Accords in 2005, Egypt ceded control of their own sovereign territory, this section of land, to Israel? Like, this is Egyptian land. But Israel has control over it. Does anyone else find this interesting? Yes.
I mean, exactly. It sounds very U.S.-like, you know?
Yes, exactly. I do. Excuse me.
I mean... All right. But so the U.S. would never give up control. I mean, the U.S. would never give up control of its land in this way to another sovereign country.
Yes, we are. Have you not heard of illegal immigrants crossing over into?
Oh, okay.
We're doing exactly that.
Okay. Yeah, I guess. That's right.
But so I guess that's the way of the world now.
I guess that's right. Let us know what you think
about
this.
It's only been 7 million, though, so that's not.
Yeah. This is unbelievable.
No, but I mean, the distinction here, though, is... Well, it's hard to make any distinctions. Okay. I was going to say, do we destroy their homeland? Yeah, we do that. Okay. Do we destroy their economy so they have to leave? Yeah, we do that too. But we don't. But see, one of the questions that has been asked to Israel, if you're so concerned about these Palestinians, evacuate them into Israel. And that's never been even a question, right? Nope, we're not going to do that. We're going to chase them out and have this land as we've always wanted it.
Right. So they'll be cast out completely. And then they'll live in this little trapezoid controlled by Israeli defense forces inside of Egypt.
Yeah.
And it kind of gives a foreshadowing of how many people they plan on letting live in Palestine because they all have to fit in that 2-mile square.
Oh, that's awful. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we'll be watching this very closely over the next few days because this is about to get even more serious than it already is. And how many more people need to die in order for someone to step in and say enough is enough? I mean, the United States could immediately step in and say, no way, enough. And they're not doing that. And Joe Biden is out to lunch, of course, not concerned about this in the least. We've got more news to get to here on your Monday. We're going to be looking at NATO greenlighting attacks inside of Russia, because Jens Stoltenberg, the head of NATO, just gave Ukraine carte blanche. Start sending long-range weapons into Ukraine. And according to reports tonight, same Ukraine, by the way, that tried to target and kill Tucker Carlson with an IED while he was in Moscow, trying to target his vehicle. And that plot was foiled, according to sources tonight, inside of Russia. Unbelievable. So this is the same people we're going to send money to and support going after Tucker Carlson. That's what happens. Okay. We're going to get there in a second. We're going to talk about that. But first, right now, do you find yourself with a substantial amount of extra cash that's currently sitting idle and not generating returns? Maybe you're like so nervous about what's happening in other, you know, what's going on right now with inflation or other things, and you have it sitting in a savings account right now. You don't know what to do with it because Jerome Powell and Joe Biden, who knows what's going to happen, right? Well, our friends over at Moomoo right now would give you 8.1% savings with their new account. When you open your new account with Moomoo, you'll get an 8.1% API for your uninvested cash. So yes, it's a trading app, it's a trading account, but you don't have to trade. You could just have that cash parked there earning 8.1%. That's 17 times the national average savings rate, yes. And there is no minimum deposit there's no minimum deposit limit for the cash sweep account. This is one of the highest interest rates that I know of. What I love, Moomoo, is that it stands out by offering zero commissions and no platform fees for stocks, options, ETFs. It's packed with powerful market analysis features, absolutely free. For example, now is U.S. stock market earnings season right now. Financial data, analyst ratings, earnings calendar, and more, all free to use. The 6.8 margin rate is one of the lowest I've come across. You can tap into pro-level tools and information absolutely free. So sign up using our link and grab 15 free stocks as well, and park your idle funds on Moomoo for a sweet 5.1% API, plus right now for a limited time, an additional 3% extra, or earn up to $5,000 in cash rewards when you transfer your assets over to Moomoo. Maybe you were using one of those other accounts, you know, like a Robinhood or something like that. You want to transfer it over. You can earn up to $5,000 in cash rewards by transferring your stuff over to Moomoo. So go there right now, redacted.inc/Moomoo, redacted.inc/Moomoo. And all right, 901 Design says, are you not going to talk about Tucker's interview? You mean with Putin? Thank you for your super chat. We did a whole discussion about it. Well, it aired on a Thursday night.
No, we went away after.
It aired on a Thursday night,
and we were out for the following week. So yeah, we didn't cover it. Thank you for noticing. We covered it in the run-up. But by the time we got back, we felt like it had been sufficiently covered, and there was nothing to add to the conversation.
I'll just ask you guys, what did you guys think about the interview in the comments? You know, what did you guys think about it? I thought it was very strange, like the first 30 minutes of it, of course, when Putin went on his like historical odyssey.
Yeah.
I couldn't help but thinking, can you imagine President Biden doing a similar 2-hour interview?
I was just going to say the same thing. Like he's like, I got a 30-minute thing to tell. Ah, never mind.
He'd be asleep. He would literally be asleep. There's no way, anyway.
All right. Well, the U.S. wants to censor your plain old opinions and make sure that it's not foreign misinformation. This is a new initiative from the U.S. State Department, and they said they will lead a coalition to counter disinformation with Canada and the U.K. through the Global Engagement Center. I'm going to call them the GEC for the rest of this segment. Now, take a look at this. Here's a recent statement from the State Department saying the UK and Canada, we're going to be working together on this foreign manipulation stuff, disinformation. It's a problem. Now, you would think that after the Twitter files, when the GEC was ousted as a propagator of misinformation, they made stuff up in order to deplatform people. They made up narratives about Iran, Russia, and China. But still, Twitter, Canada and the UK are like, yeah, we'll let you lead this one. You did a good job on those things, I guess. Now, the Global Engagement Center is the same organization that created misinformation about Russia and China and COVID and tried to deplatform normal people that went against the government narrative. With that in mind, here is a story from The Guardian today saying U.S. to lead global alliance to counter government disinformation. And here is what they say must be done from this special envoy, James Rubin. He says the GEC hopes to agree on definitions for information manipulation versus plain old opinions that other governments are entitled to have, even if we disagree with them. And they're going to join forces with the UK and Canada, and they're hoping to snag a couple other partners. Now, do you want the government to define things like this, right? What is a plain old opinion? And what is a definition that's acceptable? Right there, my spidey sense goes off, right? Now, last year, we had two rounds of the Twitter files that pointed at the GEC as the baddies. They're the bad guys. They don't know how to root out disinformation. They label things they don't like as disinformation. That's pretty clear, but I'm going to show it to you anyway. Here was one from the first one, from the Twitter files number 17. This came in March. In this document dump, we saw that the Atlantic Council's Digital Forensic Research Lab was funded by the GEC, and they wrote to Twitter with a list of people that they suspected were engaging in inauthentic behavior. Okay, it was inauthentic because they didn't like it, so they said if this person says anything pro-whatever, they must be state-funded from somebody else. Specifically, they were looking for Hindu nationalism. More broadly, don't you dare think nationalistically. If you're a Hindu, you must be a state actor. And only so many on this list had anything to do with it. Many were just ordinary Americans with no connection to India or no clue about Indian politics. They just took the liberty to make a spreadsheet of Twitter users they wanted Twitter to depopulate. They also had hundreds of Chinese, suspected Chinese accounts that they thought were foreign information. Many were connected to Iran that weren't. Now, Taibbi at the time said this about the GEC. He says they usually list themselves as a State Department entity, but they're not. They were created by Obama's last year, and the GEC is an interagency group within the State Department whose initial partners include the FBI, the DHS, the NSA, the CIA, DARPA, Special Operations Command, and others. So this is not just the State Department. So do not be fooled. This is all government agencies. And it's not just foreign. It's who is saying things that is against our narrative that we can label foreign, right? Then the GEC sent these reports to the media. So they had this long list of users that they said, we think these are probably bad guys. They sent the list to the media. And then in the Twitter files, we see the media following up with Twitter and saying, you're gonna deplatform these people, right? We have the list. These people are still active. What are you gonna do? So the media then doing the bidding of this government agency. Now, Taibbi said that the GEC passed some good information to Twitter, but mostly not. They used this report here called Russian Pillars of Disinformation and Propaganda, full of spurious associations, such as the fact that anyone who tweets anything critical of the US or slightly in favor of a narrative that could be favorable to Russia, China, or Iran is a foreign agent that should be deplatformed. Taibbi concludes that disinformation studies have mostly become a con where non-experts mesmerize reporters with what one former GEC staffer calls hairball charts. Take a look at this one, hairball charts. So here is what he's saying that, you know, basically it's just gobbledygook speak and reporters take it. And then if you look at this hairball chart, it's just saying, where do we have influence and who are the people where we don't have influence? And let's say that they're the bad guys. And then get the media to do our bidding by calling them the bad guys. And that, in fact, happened. In fact, last year, the Washington Examiner profiled a GEC-funded NGO in the UK that listed media outlets by risk, right? And so what they did was put money into the media outlets that were not high risk. In fact, the GEC obligated almost $100 million, of which roughly $80 million came from the Pentagon, and gave it to at least 39 different news organizations whose names were redacted. Here is the report. And in that report, we see this list of good dogs, basically. These are media organizations that they think are good that they then gave money to. So when you wonder, why is the media not more critical of these State Department narratives? Well, could that be why?
Yes, it could
Wondering?
Be. Wondering? It could be why. I wonder.
Right. So all of that should prove to you that they are not a group that Canada and the UK might say, yeah, let's work with them. They're doing some good stuff. But that was only one of the Twitter files that mentioned the GEC. There was another earlier in January of 2023 called Twitter and the FBI belly button. Do you remember this?
Yeah, it's disgusting.
Yeah, we talked about this. This round showed that GEC was able to get the media to bite on its narrative that certain published COVID concerns were Russian misinformation. Also, they were Chinese, also Iranian. Here are two headlines that just picked that up and went with it. Russia linked disinformation campaign fueling coronavirus alarm, U.S. says. Look at the date on that. February 22nd.
Russia linked disinformation campaign fueling coronavirus alarm.
So France 24 just went with this, right? Yes. Oh, okay. COVID alarm in February of 2020 was Russia linked. That didn't age well, right? And here was the narrative around that thousands of Russian-linked social media accounts were spreading misinformation about the COVID pandemic. Here's another from Politico. State report, which we know as the GEC, Russian, Chinese, and Iranian disinformation narratives echo one another. This was about the U.S. having bioweapons and looking into the U.S. having perhaps any research around COVID in biolabs that were abroad. That report didn't age well. Here is when they said China, Iran, and Russia are using the coronavirus crisis to launch a propaganda and disinformation onslaught against the U.S., the State Department warns in a new report. That's all the GEC making all this stuff up. Now, in hindsight, that seems so laughable given what we now know about the government and COVID. It didn't age well, but they felt comfortable making up these reports and sending them along. When Twitter was pushed to back up these assertions, they couldn't. When they said, these accounts, deplatform these, they must be Chinese or Russian, Twitter disputed that, and that's when politicians and the mainstream media let the dogs out on Twitter. Senator Mark Warner held a press conference saying that Twitter was inadequate. Twitter executives were warning one another that Warner was taking his cues from Hillary Clinton, who also did the same thing. She's, again, accused Facebook, Twitter, and Google of enabling Russian agents. Where did she get that? From the GEC. So now that we remind ourselves all that these bad guys were up to, basically telling lies, getting social media to do their bidding, and then making up more lies, do we want them to head up this new global disinformation project? I do not, because a lot of times that just means censorship of legitimate questions. But here's what they say they're going to do anyway. This week, this is from James Rubin, the special envoy for the GEC. He says, we want to promote more fact-based information. Okay. But at the same time, they want to label that information operations that are generated by the Chinese government or the Kremlin, but to which they don't admit. He said, in the end, this is all I know I can do right now without interfering with a free press. We're not asking for such covert disinformation to be taken down, but a way to be found for the source to be labeled, such as, he says, an example is that the U.S. has bioweapons in Ukraine, which Victoria Nuland admitted that we do, right? We've seen it in the piece I did about Alexei Navalny. We know that they have Novichok in Ukraine, the United States
What
does.
Is Novichok?
Novichok is the nerve agent that they say poisoned Alexei Navalny, but
one
we're
drop
never
of
able
it.
To
yeah.
prove.
We're never able to prove it. One drop of it could kill an elephant.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. So, if it's in the room, you have to be in full protective gear. You can get it through your skin or through inhaling it. Now, we know the United States has it, and they have it abroad. So Russia and China don't have to do very much to say that for that to be true. So anyway, that's some of the things that this guy's like, well, we can't just let them say that stuff, even though I'm here. I'm not a Russian agent or a Chinese agent or a Persian agent. I'm no agent of any kind. And
you're a secret agent.
Not secret that secret. No. I'm here on YouTube.
No,
we're live.
Secret agent. You're the loudest person. Like if you're going to try to sneak into some place, like you're...
I wouldn't.
No.
I'm not covert.
Not stealthy at all. She knocks over things and yeah.
Where was I? Now, interestingly enough, The Guardian, when they covered this, did not provide any context about the disinformation that the GEC has been guilty of. Instead, it just quotes Rubin saying he knows he can't really legitimately do that. He can't, like, track people. He can't get them to take, you know, any accounts down because what they don't say is because it's being litigated in the Supreme Court right now, and that was fun, and we're not supposed to do it anymore. And now all of this tracks with what former State Department whistleblower Michael Benn said on Tucker Carlson's show last week. He said that the U.S. built spying tools and censorship techniques to use against foreign players, but after Russiagate collapsed and Trump fired all these guys, they got together and essentially have turned these misinformation tools against the American people. Watch.
It was only after Russiagate died in July 2019, when Robert Mueller basically choked on the stand for 3 hours and revealed he had absolutely nothing after 2.5 years of investigation, that the foreign to domestic switcheroo took place, where they took all of this censorship architecture spanning DHS, the FBI, the CIA, the DOD, the DOJ, and then the thousands of government-funded NGO and private sector mercenary firms were all basically transited from a foreign focus, from a foreign predicate, a Russian disinformation predicate, to a democracy predicate by saying that disinformation is not just a threat when it comes from the Russians, it's actually an intrinsic threat to democracy itself.
Okay. So given that we know all of this, this does seem to be playing out before our very eyes. I'm inclined to tell my local representative to defund the GEC. I don't think the State Department should be up to this at all and not working inside other intergovernment agencies to do this. I think it's bad news. Why did Canada and the UK not get the memo? Do they want to work with them despite this or because of this? Let me know what you think of this in the chat.
Yeah, thank you so much. And do us a big favor, because we have, because of our content over the past couple of weeks here, this platform has been suppressing our content. This has been verified. And one way we can actually, you can help us out is just by pressing the like button, actually. Because while we're live, when you hit the like button, it actually pushes our show out into more, so more people see it. And that happens specifically on YouTube. And this is something that I don't think they're fully aware of, actually, because it actually does work. So when you guys do hit the like button, you're going to hopefully see a few thousand more people come join us here. It's a crazy thing. But anyway, if you do it, it really does help to push this information out to a larger audience. We are not CNN. We are not paid for by billionaires. And when we cover big stories that are very, very important, like free speech, it's amazing how few views then YouTube provides for that content, because they do not want you to know about this content. So thank you guys so much for smashing that like button on Rumble. Rumble, you guys are amazing. That platform is free speech, but you know what I'm talking about over on YouTube. So please hit that like button.
There are certain pieces we did last week that we thought were really big stories that didn't perform the way we had hoped. And so, of course, we take responsibility and we think, could we have done that better? But certain headlines with a certain person who rhymes with massage just didn't get out there in the way that we had hoped.
We've spoken to other journalists on this exact issue, and this is apparently a very big problem. So, yeah, you're not allowed to talk about that, I guess. Unbelievable.
I don't think it really does rhyme with massage.
No, it doesn't rhyme with massage.
But you know.
Yeah, exactly.
That wasn't a good rhyme.
We don't need to say it because this is literally what happens. And then they just block us. It's unbelievable.
This is
the United States right now. Like this is supposed to be the land of the free, freedom of the press. These big tech companies that are in cahoots with the intelligence community, it's destroying our country. It absolutely is destroying our country. So
But we used to we used to make fun of like what happened in China with the censorship all the time. Like that was a narrative. Like we don't want to end up like China, and now we're basically worse.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
or right on par. I mean, it's unbelievable. Yeah, maybe actually worse because they're absolutely ruining people's lives.
I mean, it's the mainstream media that tells us that we have it better than China. I don't trust them at all, so I don't know what it's actually like in China. It's crappy for us. So let's do all we can to work around it.
All right, we've got more news in a moment. We're going to be talking about Ukraine and what is happening there because over the weekend, Zelensky told us all that, in fact, only 30,000 people have been killed.
As if that's fine.
Yeah, as if that's fine to begin with, but it's laughable and it's a total lie on the backside of this. Also, Jens Stoltenberg, the head of NATO, just gave a green light to Ukraine to start long-range attacks inside of Russia. How's that going to go? What will be left of Ukraine? Here's a news flash. Nothing. Ukraine will not exist as a country anymore in short order if they keep this up. I should also mention, people in the chat pointing out that a man was arrested in for targeting Tucker Carlson with an IED attack by the Ukrainian government to kill Tucker Carlson. Apparently, according to reports, he was paid $4,000 to carry it out. It was foiled. It didn't obviously happen, thank God. But this is Ukraine right now. So we're going to get to that story in a moment. But first...
First, we want to tell you about our friends over at The Wellness Company because the government is always trying to have us be dependent on them, control our lives. That is a narrative we cover often on this show. Close to 90% of pharmaceuticals in the U.S. are produced outside of the U.S. So what happens when the next global crisis strikes? What happens when China decides that Americans shouldn't get their shipments anymore? The price of medications rise and the pharmacy shelves will be empty, but not if the Wellness Company can do anything about it. They can at least help you and your family be prepared. The Wellness Company's medical emergency kit holds 8 life-saving medications that every American should keep in their medicine cabinet. It's like having a doctor at home. The kit contains antibiotics, antivirals, and antiparasitics, medicines like amoxicillin, Z-Pak, plus a 22-page guidebook with instructions on safe uses. From tick bites to COVID to extreme bioterror events, every scenario is covered. These prescription emergency kits are in huge demand right now. So head on over to twc.health/redacted and grab yours before they're gone. That's twc.health/redacted. Use the code redacted and you'll save 10% at checkout. So be safe, be prepared, and stay well. The kits are only available in the U.S. That's twc.health/redacted.
Well, to the war in Ukraine now, where this weekend we saw NATO giving the green light for Ukraine to launch attacks inside of Russia. And Ukrainian President Zelensky this weekend announced a new big counteroffensive, but he can't tell us too much about it, but it is coming. And just to put in some context here, let's take a look at the last big massive counteroffensive that Ukraine launched against Russia. Taking a look at the map here from June 1st, 2023 to February 26, 2024. I don't know if you notice anything here, but of course, very minimal, if any, change. And the changes that you do see are on the part of Russia advancing in certain towns and taking over Adivka and other towns as well. This weekend, we also heard from Victoria Nuland. Victoria Nuland, who, of course, was responsible in part and parcel for the coup in Ukraine, which installed a Western puppet government. She is confident, she told Christian Amanpour, that Ukraine will get this additional money to launch this new counteroffensive when Congress comes back in session. Listen.
How are you going to make sure Ukraine gets vital weapons and ammunition?
Christian, I have strong confidence that when the House comes back after they've been out in their districts hearing from the American people, after they have heard from Ukraine, they have heard from Europe, which, by the way, just passed $54 billion in additional aid itself, that we will do what we have always done, which is defend democracy and freedom around the world, not just for victims of tyrants like Putin, but in our own interest in preserving a free and open international order. That's what we need to do. We've done it before. And by the way, we have to remember that the bulk of this money is going right back into the U.S. economy to make those weapons, including good-paying jobs in some 40 states across the United States.
To make sense of all of this and these movements and these comments from Zelensky over the weekend, we want to bring in former U.S. Marine, former U.N. weapons inspector Scott Ritter, who's been spot on about this counteroffensive, the failed first counteroffensive last summer. Scott, good to see you.
Good to see you. Thanks for having me.
So first, I just want to get your assessment of this map and what Zelensky says about a new counteroffensive. So this new counteroffensive is coming. He's telling everyone publicly about it, by the way, which seems like such a ridiculous thing to do. Will it be as successful as the first counteroffensive?
Oh, undoubtedly. It will be as successful as the first counteroffensive, which means that whatever material and whatever personnel he's able to cobble together, if he's able and indeed able to do this, will all be destroyed and they'll all be killed, captured, or wounded. I mean, that because that's the end result of the first of this summer counteroffensive of 2023. Minimal territorial gains. That territory which they did capture was part of a Russian strategy of flexible defense, meaning that the Russians were going to give them the territory no matter what, because they're more than happy to trade territory for dead Ukrainian lives. And this is what happened. The Ukrainians didn't penetrate the first major barrier. They all died in the crumple zone of the Russian defenses. And if there ever is a Ukrainian counteroffensive, and just because Zelensky says there will be one doesn't mean there will be one, because the Russians right now are pretty good at interdicting Ukrainian forces as they build up. But when you take a look at this map, Ukraine has lost almost every territorial gain they made and has ceded considerable territory to Russia. So, you know, this counteroffensive has failed. It's Russia that's on the, I guess, counteroffensive right now, and I don't see anything stopping the Russian momentum until this conflict is over. I think that we're, you know, there'll be the occasional, you know, counterpunch by Ukraine, but they don't have anything left to counterpunch with. That's the problem.
I read an unbelievable report from a journalist who was in Ukraine recently and left Ukraine and said what you've been hearing about Ukraine is a total lie. Of course, you're hearing that, you know, everyone's thriving, they're doing just fine, there's no problem with the recruitment numbers, they have the forces that they need. And she pointed out that when you go to different stores, when you go around the city, there are no men anywhere. You won't see men. And the men that there are basically hiding in their homes, because if they come out, they are worried about being conscripted almost immediately. The conscription groups go around and try, if people are on their way to work, they will be grabbed and thrown into vehicles and sent to the front lines to be killed. So these poor men are having to try to provide for their families, to try to make some sort of money to go to work. If they go to work, they're rounded up and then thrown onto the front lines and then killed. So Zelensky this weekend said that only 30,000 Ukrainians have been killed. The numbers of 300,000 are a total lie, even though the New York Times even points out as many as 500,000 casualties in a report last summer. So Zelensky says nothing to see here, don't worry about it. Yet independently, we know that that is a, seems like it's a total lie. What's your assessment of his numbers?
Well, I think one of the big problems facing Zelensky right now is a PR problem, both in Ukraine and abroad. How do you square a 500,000 dead? And here's the thing about Zelensky's numbers. You know, we know that there have been 400,000 obituaries for Ukrainian soldiers since the start of this war.
Wow.
We also know that the Russians have, that the Ukrainians have abandoned over 120,000 dead on the battlefield that they call missing, that they, you know, and these haven't been counted in. And the Russians, as they are, you know, taking territory, are finding just the heaps of Ukrainian bodies, both unburied and those where the Ukrainians dump them into a ditch and cover them up. You know, so Zelensky knows that he's suffered horrific casualties. I mean, Zelensky has alluded to this, the need for an immediate 500,000. Why? Because they lost 500,000. And this is dead. We're not talking about wounded. Wounded, you know, figure triple that number. We're talking, you know, over a million wounded. So, you know, Zelensky's in la-la land. He is trying to create this impression, but he's not even fooling himself. I mean, you look at his eyes while he makes a statement, and you know that he knows that we know that it's a lie. But this is the PR game that's being played right now so that he can convince the West to continue doubling down on stupid. And there's a meeting, I guess they're assembling a meeting of the top European nations right now. Macron is assembling this for the goal of trying to figure out how to empower Ukraine to do this top secret counteroffensive that nobody's supposed to know about, but everybody apparently does because Zelensky has announced it. So has his Minister of Defense, but we're not talking about it. But I mean, it's obvious. Look, we know that there's several thousand, not tens of thousands, several thousand Ukrainian soldiers being trained right now in Belgium and in other places. The Belgian government has admitted it, and others have as well. There's no doubt in my mind that these forces will be held in some sort of strategic reserve. But the best Ukraine will be able to accumulate, and right now when they speak of a counteroffensive, the talk is that Ukraine will go on a flexible defense throughout 2024 and prepare for a counteroffensive sometime in 2025. They're seeking to replicate what they call the successes of the first phase of this war, where Russia pushed in aggressively and Ukraine, using flexible defense tactics, were able to attrit the Russians down. That's the goal. That's the objective of the Ukrainians. But we need to remember that in 2022, Ukraine had a professional army that had been trained for 7 years by NATO to NATO standards. Those all they all died in this flexible defense. Talk to the Ukrainian soldiers about the situation in May and June of 2022. Everybody was dead. Everybody was wounded. They had nothing left until the United States pumped in $48 billion of Lend-Lease and rebuilt a new Ukrainian army. And then Ukraine's been rebuilding armies ever since because they all die on the battlefield. This isn't the same way. Russia has learned its lessons. Russia will not be rushing forward. There's not going to be any bold advances. Russia is taking a village here, a village there, every day, advancing villages, bite by bite by bite. And the Ukrainians have nothing. The Russians have said the Ukrainians cannot solidify a defensive line. They don't have troops. And at some point in time, Zelensky is going to have to take this reserve that he's building up and commit it. And then he'll have nothing for this counteroffensive. There will not be a counteroffensive. It's a fictional fantasy in the mind of Zelensky and his Western supporters.
I mean, at some point, the jig has to be up, right? I mean, you've got nobody left. At what point?
It's up, Clayton. It's up. I mean, we're looking at the end. Look, everybody, I mean, Scott, you keep saying it's up. It's up. Man, we knew in World War II, we knew it was up in the fall of 1944. There wasn't a person on the American and British general staff that said, I think the Germans got some, they're going to win this one. There wasn't anybody in Moscow saying, oh my God, I think the Germans could turn this thing around. Everybody knew it was over, but there were many months of hard fighting. And I will make this point over and over again. The bloodiest month for Americans in World War II on the fighting the Germans wasn't D-Day, wasn't June. It wasn't December 44, Battle of the Bulge. It was April 1945, the last month of the war. That was the bloodiest month. As the Germans were defeated, as they were dying, as everything was finished, you know, it's hard to kill a man, Clayton. And a desperate man will fight desperately. The Ukrainians will put up a resistance. They've shown that. There are many desperate people in Ukraine who are capable of desperate resistance, but they will go the way of the Nazis in 1945. They will all die or surrender, one way or the other. This war is over. There's nothing that can happen to change this around. There is no miracle weapon. There's nothing the West could do. The West can cause more people to die. I mean, that's the tragedy of this for, you know, Macron and the other European leaders to say we want to help Ukraine, but all they're going to do is guarantee that another 100,000, 200,000 Ukrainians die. That's it.
Desperate people do desperate things. That's something we always say here on this show. And, you know, you're seeing that, I think, on the part of NATO right now in the United States Congress. You're seeing a lot of desperation. You saw Zelensky a few weeks ago saying, how dare Congress, United States Congress, take 2 weeks vacation? You know, war doesn't stop, you know, and so Congress goes on vacation. This money is not allocated, though Victoria Nuland really wants this additional money going there. You heard pundits over the weekend. You heard Nikki Haley, all of them saying, how can we be abandoning Ukraine? How are we doing that? How are we going to abandon Ukraine? And so if we pump another $60, $70 billion into this mess, What do you, it's just an extension of the last throes of a desperate situation, or will this change anything?
Well, it won't change anything. I mean, look, it'll make some defense contractors happy because, as Victoria Nuland has said, the majority of that money will be pumped into American defense industries to produce new equipment. But how long does it take to produce new equipment? Ukraine needs an instant army. Shake and bake, baby. You need to add water, shake, throw in the microwave, pull it out, and you got a new army. That doesn't exist. You need well-trained troops. They don't have any. They're all dead. You might be able to pull 1,000 out, 1,000 here to get trained up, but Ukraine needs, as Zaluzhny said, 500,000 right now. They don't have it. They don't have the tanks. They don't have the armored fighting vehicles. They don't have the artillery systems. They don't have the artillery shells. They have nothing. So even if this money materialized, it would not have a strategic impact until the end of 2024, early 2025 at the earliest. But the bottom line is, you know, I can't predict the future, but let's just put it this way. We're in the midst of a presidential election year. I call it the silly season of American politics, where common sense and normal thinking just doesn't apply. Do you really think, I mean, now that, you know, Donald Trump swamped Nikki Haley in South Carolina, it looks like he's on his way to secure the Republican nomination. Do you really think that Mike Johnson is going to punt the biggest gift that Joe Biden has given the Republican Party, that is the crisis at the southern border? Do you really think that he's going to give up the leverage that he has? Do you really think that Biden is going to make the compromises necessary to appease the Republicans if the Republicans suddenly yield and give this money to Joe Biden for Ukraine? It's the leverage they have. The Republicans don't care about Ukraine. And frankly speaking, despite all of Victoria Nuland's and everybody else's pontificating, neither do the American people. The American people care more about the border than, especially the Republican voters, care more about the border than they do about Ukraine. Johnson isn't going to appease the Democrats. He's not going to do the right thing by Victoria Nuland. Not in my opinion. I think we're into presidential politics, and Johnson knows that his bread is buttered by Donald Trump. And so I don't see him turning his back on Trump at this critical time, because Trump is a vengeful man. I mean, for better or for worse, he's a man who believes in retribution. And if Mike Johnson betrays Trump this early, Mike Johnson may not be a representative come November. So Mike Johnson knows this. He's not going to commit political suicide, and neither are the other Republicans there. So I don't share Victoria Nuland's confidence that this money is going to be allocated, but we'll see. It's American politics. I mean, they caught Chuck Schumer, you know, on a hot mic moment, admitting that he lies about everything. He tricks everything. It's all, you know, so, and the thing is, Chuck Schumer's still the Senate majority leader, meaning that if American people cared about politicians lying, Schumer would have been gone a long time ago. But we don't care. We're a pathetic nation full of pathetic sheep who allow our politicians to do anything they want. So making a political prediction's almost impossible, except this. Donald Trump is a vengeful man, and Mike Johnson is not about to put his neck on the chopping block.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. Well, we'll see. What do you think? I'll get you out of here with this. What do you think Putin's going to do here? I mean, just sort of sit back, continue this sort of incremental village by village movement here. We hear, you know, getting F-16s now, and we're going to Jens Stoltenberg, long range weapons attacking into Russia. What will Putin's response be to that? Or have we already seen it? Just the Western media is not covering it. Certain attacks on different supply ships and supply routes that are being supplied by NATO, but we don't ever hear that reporting.
Look, the Russians have made it clear that if NATO directly intervenes into this war, then it's a war between Russia and NATO, and that war will not be fought on Ukraine. It'll be fought in Europe. I mean, it's as plain as day. But Russia also has shown through its actions that it will not, even though it calls NATO a party to the conflict by providing weaponry and stuff, that if it's Ukrainian pilots taking off from Ukrainian soil, then the Ukraine will be struck by these weapons. The Russians are winning this war. The Russians have won this war. This war is over. I mean, there's months left of fighting, but the outcome is guaranteed. So Putin is not going to do anything that changes that calculus. He's not going to overreact. He is not going to do something that's precipitous that could draw NATO into this conflict. He's going to continue doing what he does, lay the marker down that there will be fatal consequences for NATO engagement and direct engagement in Ukraine, but also that the other thing he's told the Ukrainians is the longer you continue this ridiculous fantasy of believing that you can fight and prevail against Russia, the more likely it is that when this conflict ends, there won't be a Ukraine. And we're getting to that point, Clayton. Ukraine's finished. I mean, they've lost this war. Now the question is, do they want Black Sea access? I think they've lost that permanently. I don't think the Russians will entertain termination of this conflict if it doesn't have Russia controlling the Black Sea, Odessa linking up with Transnistria, Russia controlling Dnipropetrovsk, Kharkov. Now Ukraine's lost all of this heavy industry, so it's a rump state. Now, do they want Russia to come in and occupy all of it and terminate any notion of Ukrainian nationhood? Is this what they want? Because this is what they're going to get. And NATO needs to understand that. But NATO doesn't care. NATO's always been willing to throw Ukraine on the sacrificial block. And Ukraine is being sacrificed. It's up to Ukraine to wake up right now and understand that Zelensky has led them down a path where they are going to lose 40% of their country territorially. And they are going to lose significant aspects of their industry. But if they want anything left to call Ukraine a Ukrainian homeland, they need to be suing for peace right now. Not with the Zelensky formula, but turning to the Russians and begging for forgiveness and seeing how merciful Russia can be.
Yeah, Ukraine will not exist very soon unless they wake up. That seems to be what's going to happen here. And then I guess all of these NGOs and all of these big companies that wanted to build BlackRock and others want to come in and buy up this land, it's going to be Russian territory. They're going to be upset about that pretty soon.
The funniest thing, Clayton, I mean, I don't want to throw too many people under the bus here, but go to Georgetown University in their master's degree program in their international security program and look at the master's thesis of all these bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, you know, young Americans who have been supporting this Ukraine, you know, post-war reconstruction, building the new Ukraine. I mean, you just look at all this stuff and you realize just how lost America is. We've taken an entire generation and we've filled their head full of nonsense. And these master's theses that they're writing that are supposed to propel them onto greater careers are not even, they'll only be used for lighting fires down the road because the words that contain them, they're empty, they're meaningless. They're so far removed from reality. But this is American policy as a whole. We live in a land of fiction and the Russians live in the land of reality, and reality will trump fiction every day of the week.
Well said. Scott Ritter, great to see you as always. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Scott. Unbelievable and terrifying to think about these Georgetown University like courses you can take, like rebuilding Ukraine, like our plan for putting money into Ukraine. You know, we've already seen the Dia app, right? They've rolled out digital currency and all of that in Ukraine. This was like a test bed. And the West thought Klaus Schwab, the World Economic Forum, all of these people thought that Ukraine would be like, this is what's going to happen. We will create a coup, CIA-backed coup in Ukraine. We will overthrow the government. We'll put in a Western government. And we'll literally just needle Russia. We'll just stick it to Russia. And you know what? We'll have all these NGOs, all of these American companies, all of this stuff will come in. We will build basically United States garrison state in Ukraine. How'd that work out for you? It's a total failure. And now, you know, you have Sweden joining NATO. We're going to see a war in Scandinavia. You're really seeing a major shift in 2024. I think we are literally seeing the collapse of globalization, and you're seeing this protectionism. And it's going to be really interesting to see what Donald Trump does. Does he take a total isolationist, protectionist position in the United States if he wins and becomes president of the United States, gets us out of all of this stuff? Or do we have some sort of a return to globalization again? But I think you're seeing real battle lines being drawn. And in some ways, it's kind of like the modern, this is like modern dark ages. It's kind of how I was thinking about it today, you know, and you have the fall of the Roman Empire.
Right.
And you have all of these states which become protectionist states and they all recede unto themselves. You're going to see states, countries right now saying, screw you. I've got lithium. I've got all kinds of different minerals here at home in my backyard. I'm not sharing it with you anymore.
Right.
You've screwed me over. You know, Russia still sends uranium to the United States with a flip of a switch. Putin could shut all of that off in one heartbeat. And I think that's what you're about to see. We are in dangerous waters right now, my friends. Dangerous waters.
As someone who has said many times, I was a bleeding heart liberal until you study, and then you're not. And I thought America First sounded like a pretty obnoxious slogan. But at this point, I had no idea that I would that would resonate to me at this point of like, hey, let's not start wars. Let's protect ourselves. Let's do things that endear ourselves to the rest of the world and protect us and our own. Let's be great in and of ourselves. Who'd have thought? Later on this week, we're going to talk to an expert about lithium reserves in Serbia and what that's going to do to turn Europe topsy-turvy. So we're looking forward to that. We're going to talk about, in a second, a new study that shows that men and women have different brains. So does that mean we can say sex is real? We're going to say that. But first, Clayton's going to take a drink. And then we're going to tell you about our friends over at...
You talk more about that. That men and women have brains and also different body parts. I don't know if you, this is like apparently news now that we have to actually put out in 2024 different body parts.
That we're made differently. Yeah. We're going to show you that. And
I don't buy it.
Yeah. How did this research get funded in 2024? I have no idea.
Who knows? I mean, I don't know. You know, we're in a really interesting economic moment right now, too. Because if you look at what's happening March 20th, we're waiting on this big Fed meeting. There's a lot of concern. Well, what's going to happen with inflation right now? Are we going to see interest rates actually go back up again? Are the Fed's hands tied right now because we see a collapse of commercial real estate? It's crazy out there right now. It's crazy right now. And so the other day someone was asking, where do you guys invest right now? It's so crazy. You're in election year. And where, I'll just tell you honestly, where we invest right now, we buy gold, we're buying silver, and we buy real estate. That's what we're doing. And our friends over at Lear can actually help you do that as well. If you're interested in buying gold, silver, have it sent right to your house, you can actually do that. If you keep it at home in your safe, in your gun safe, you can do that. Or if you can have it held off-site at a store, at a facility that's protected by guards 24/7. Yes, they're like Fort Knox, these places. That's what we choose to do. You do you. You can do whatever you want. I know people that have them in their gun safe. They can keep gold coins, silver ounces, all of that right there. But with the U.S. dollar being printed like crazy, I just watched Alan Greenspan. He said, you know, we can never default because America can always print more money. Yes, devaluing the currency over and over and over again. $34 trillion in debt right now. $34 trillion in debt. So is your family's future tied to the U.S. dollar? Is it tied to, who knows, some crazy valuations in the stock market right now? Anyway, in our mind, a portion of our portfolio should be in gold and silver. And our friends at Lear can help you get set up with this. And they've got a $3,200 gold report right now that you can get totally free. Just call them. You can read it and see if it's for you so you understand where gold prices are headed. We have price targets of $3,200 an ounce for gold. It's right around $2,000 right now. So go to LearRedacted.com, check them out, grab your free $3,200 gold kit report, or get on the phone with them and tell them you heard about them on Redacted. Their phone number is 1-800-613-3557. Just say hello. Say, hey, our friends over at Redacted sent me. These guys are patriots. It's an American company. They have thousands of five-star reviews. They've been in business for decades. They are fantastic. So call them right now, 1-800-613-3557, or go to LearRedacted.com to get your free bonus report today.
Well, guess what? Biological sex is real. Men and women have different bodies. It's amazing that we can say that in the year 2024. Stanford scientists claim to have shown this for the first time.
First time
we realized that men and women's brains function differently.
Oh, brains. Okay.
Yeah.
Is
this new to you, Philip?
You could have asked me to do that.
I've never heard anything about this before.
No.
I'm still slightly disappointed that that's not what the title of this, that's what you're talking about, not what I thought the title of this segment was about. So
we're sex not going to have any sex. We're not going to show you anything about the act of sex. This is about biological sex.
Okay.
I'm sorry to disappoint you. Don't turn off the channel. Don't go away.
But we need this in 2024 for people to explain this. Maybe if you could, guys watching right now, you could share this segment. We'll clip this up later and share it out. Please share this with someone out there who thinks that maybe, you know, there is no biological sex difference.
There is no biological sex. Now, I thought in the 90s we solved this with the book Men Are From Mars and Women Are From Venus. This is a very popular thing to say up until about the year 2014 when we pretended that there is no such thing as male and female bodies and that we can interchange them as we see fit. This is something that trans rights activists are trying so hard is to erase biological sex as a thing. And so anything that proves that we are separated by our chromosomes and that that is immutable is very threatening because we already know that, you know, this is a way to promote pharmaceuticals and sex changes. We know now that pharmaceuticals can block puberty. They can tip the balance of sex hormones, estrogen and testosterone. They can remove penises with surgeries. They can build new penises. They call them neopenises. They can remove boobs, put on new boobs. They can build faux vaginas. Neovagina is what they call them, which is something I really don't like because it makes those of us with biologically produced vaginas like old vaginas. I don't like that at all, but the trans people called them neo-vagina.
You're like paleo vagina?
Paleo vagina or...
Did you get a new vagina? What are you doing this weekend?
Vagina. I don't like anything. They can reposition urethras. They can change voices. They can shave shoulders, which is something popular.
What?
Trans men, in order to look more feminine, they literally shave down their shoulders.
They shave down their Adam's apples, too.
Oh, I'm going to show you a picture of that. Yeah, you're right. That's called tracheal shave. It's not like something you do on accident. You do it on purpose.
I've done that by accident with a razor when I was learning how to shave.
I can imagine this is something that every man has been afraid of doing.
I'm going to have to teach my son how to do this.
Some men do it on purpose. The tracheal shave.
Oh my God.
What they do here is like they go in through the lip and it's something that you can do without a scar. I love that this UCSF is where it's done at the otolaryngology department there. And they say that, yeah, the incision in the mouth leaves no scars. And so they were pretty excited about it. And that of the, I think, six people they did it to, they felt really happy after about 6 months having had that because they felt like this lump of flesh was really not allowing them to live as their authentic self.
What world are we living in?
Right.
Just the thought of that makes me feel uncomfortable.
I'm sorry.
I like the visualization of the term tracheal shave.
I was going to say, which part of the visualization of the shaving or of the guy going into UCSF in San Francisco having to get an operation? I was picturing like this person going to that office having to step over homeless people and human feces on their way to that doctor's appointment. Mm-hmm. That's what I first thought of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But the tracheal shave is equally as scary.
There's a lot that's uncomfortable about the idea of a tracheal shave, but now you know it exists, you're all the better for it. What they can't do yet is change the brain or the chromosomes. This is why it's so surprising. So UCSF is Northern Bay Area. Stanford is on the peninsula in the southern end of the San Francisco Bay Area. So just about an hour away, they funded a study. This is why I'm so surprised that biologically, our brains are different. Here is the study that just came out, published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Science. They used computerized models to analyze brain scans, and the computer could guess if the scan came from a man or a woman with more than 90% accuracy. Now, we know this is true because they use this mathematical formula. Clayton, explain that formula. Just kidding. I don't understand.
Oh, yeah.
I just saw it and I was like, that'll be fun. Who can understand?
2 + 2.
Okay.
I'm like going into Brian Regan mode for a moment.
Anybody? Anybody?
I don't know what that is.
Now,
some kind of formula.
Some of these findings, they were able to extrapolate sort of more generalized things like women.
I do know that that's not a word. Extrapolate.
Extrapolate. Yeah, what did I say?
I knew that's not. You said extrapolate.
No, I didn't.
Yeah, you did.
Boys.
Chat room.
Yeah, you did.
Yes. See, as a man,
all right.
As a biological man, my brain is different.
As a biological woman, I cannot admit that I said that and that I'm wrong.
See, it's already working.
All right, I'll admit that I'm wrong. I don't like it.
Wow.
Because that's how.
Mark this one down on your calendars, guys.
Here's what they found, that women don't like to say they're wrong.
Yes. That's what they found, that women don't admit they're wrong?
No. What they found is...
So,
go ahead.
I was just gonna make a quick. So Clayton's plan that he started about 3 years ago to get Natalie to admit she was wrong by creating this show and getting her on here enough that eventually it was gonna happen. It just paid off. So it's been a good run, everybody. We're shutting down.
I'm kind of short circuiting right now. Like, do I have to apologize? Because that's gonna really make me okay. I'm sorry. Extrapolate is not a word. I mispronounced.
Wow.
Okay. What was I going to say? Oh, here are some of the generalizations. This will be fun. Besides that women don't like to admit that they're wrong, women tend to be better at reading comprehension and writing ability on average and have good long-term memory. Men, conversely, seem to have stronger visual and spatial awareness and better working memory.
So that explains why women are not good drivers and men have better spatial awareness.
I think
awareness.
You might be taking this a little too far, but...
The research is in. Right?
Okay.
We think we have the research now.
Visual and spatial science. Awareness.
Got Fauci on the phone. I got science on the phone. And he says this is true. So.
Okay.
Yeah. Spatial awareness. So.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Perhaps, for instance, how many girls? Can we have a little girl talk here? Do you notice you can't parallel park when you're around your cycle? Because that is something
really?
That happens to me. For whatever reason, I can't, like, my spatial awareness is off. When I'm around that time of the month, I'm just curious. So I was looking at this, like, spatial awareness, huh? That's, like, not a feminine quality.
Well, feminists are probably freaking out right now that you're saying something like this. That's not true, Natalie. We can always parallel park.
I'm saying I don't park well around my cycle time when I'm on my period. I don't know why. I've just always noticed that. Like, I have a harder time. Okay. Anyway.
I'm going to set an alert on my watch when that happens.
Make you sure should that, have one anyway.
Yeah.
Now, the media is being very careful with this, saying that these differences could be because of a person's gendered experience. So, for instance, I am this way because I've been raised a woman, not because I'm biologically a woman, right? They trained me, perhaps, to have better reading comprehension or long-term memory. So they say we can't establish causality. Here's what the Telegraph said from this professor and author of The Gendered Brain says, well, this could be because sexes are a part of the social brain. So the key issue is whether these differences are a product of sex-specific biological influences or brain-changing gendered experiences or both. Now, you would think that this would be easy to test, right? So do the same scans of trans people to see if the modeling correctly predicts their biological sex and negates their identified sex. You could do that very easily, right? Hey, we got a model, works really well at determining sex, so let's try some trans people and see if it sort of hops over their identity. No one's going to fund that study. No one, right? So the authors of this study say they didn't do this to prove or just disprove any gender ideology. It had nothing to do with that. We are making this connection because we're just so shocked that anybody said this in the scientific community. They say they studied this because they're interested in helping people based on observed biology. One of the scientists said this, that a key motivation is that sex plays a crucial role in human brain development and aging and the manifestation of psychiatric and neurological disorders. So they want to help people to study how to help brain development better. And yes, biological sex is an important part of that. You could then extrapolate that since it's such an important part in brain development, that sex... See what they're saying here is an important part of brain development. Why do we use puberty blockers again? Why is that a thing? Just wondering. But again, this is not a part of this study. This is just we are making these connections because the trans lobby is just so whack, basically. They're so crazy. They don't allow you to say things like that. So... take a look at the study for yourself and let us know what you think. And if you'd like to make other gendered brain observations, we'll allow it.
Nuance is transphobic, though. So.
Yes. Yeah. That's true. Yeah.
Yeah, you can't do that. Hey, we have a store. I just saw someone in the chat here just said they just got their redacted coffee mug in the mail and they love it. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate that. If you want to support independent journalism, you can support what we do here at Redacted. That's a great way to do it. Again, we do not mark the prices up very much at all, literally right at cost to print these things. So we don't do that. We just, it's a way to support us here on the show. And you can go there to redactedstore.com and you can pick up our t-shirts, our hoodies, our mugs, our farmers, no food, no farmers, no food shirts that are just in our brand new ones as well. And that's more poignant than ever right now because of what's happening in Brussels as we speak. Of course, the farmers have now broken down the barricades and they're heading right into the heart of Brussels, pouring manure all over the government buildings there, letting them know that no farmers, no food. You can check that out. Go to redactedstore.com and get our I Will Not Comply hoodie. It's one of our favorites. I think it's one of our top sellers is the I Will Not Comply. And Friends Don't Let Friends, watch mainstream media mug where you can enjoy our show. So all of that, redactedstore.com. So thank you guys so much for that. Oh, one more thing, I guess. I haven't mentioned this in a few weeks, but we do have a VIP community. And our community, if you want to go over to redacted.inc, you can support us. You know, this show is totally free. We work hard to bring you a free show every day. But if you want to join our exclusive community where you get access to interviews and content that you will not see here on the channel, or stuff that you'll see before anyone else, and you just want to join in on our conversation where we have our private live streams and kind of hangouts there. We've got our Redacted Book Club as well. You can go there and become a part of our community, our Plus Club. That's right. It's Redacted Plus. And you can go over to redacted.inc and you can do an annual plan or a monthly plan if you are on Locals as well. An annual plan or a monthly plan. Totally up to you. Redacted.inc. Sign up today for our Redacted Plus Club, and great to have you all in there and support what we do here on this show Monday through Thursday and all the content that we have here. So much love to all of you guys. We'll see you back here tomorrow. We've got some special guests here on the show tomorrow. Really excited. One of the best journalists in the world is going to be joining us tomorrow here on Redacted. Really one of the, seriously, if I had to pick like on one hand, one of the five people, best journalists in the world, Vanessa Bealey would be on the top of that list. She's going to be joining us here 2 days before the war broke out in Gaza. She was literally climbing through tunnels from the Egyptian side to try to get into Gaza. Like, that's the type of woman that she is. And she's going to be here tomorrow to talk about what's going on in southern Gaza, Rafah specifically, and Egypt. This is going to be the most important story, I think, over the next few weeks as this massacre unfolds in Rafah. So,
plus, we're going to talk to Regina Watil. She is the author of Fisman's Fraud, about Canadian hate science and how it was used to institute vaccine mandates and lockdowns. That same scientist, Fisman, has come up with a new fake mathematical model to show that masks worked during the pandemic. Why would he do this? She's going to bring us that truly baffling study. So I'm looking forward to speaking to her again as well.
So all of that and more as Redacted continues tomorrow here, 4 p.m. Eastern time. Make sure you subscribe to the channel, turn on the little bell notifications on Rumble, on YouTube, and on X, and we'll see you guys tomorrow at 4 p.m. Eastern time. Have a great night, everyone.